The following is a true story, except for the ending, which just hasn't happened yet. This is Escape from Provo Canyon.
So normally when I wake up each morning, there's a small part of me that's kind of wincing at my shit reality. But today, you know, there's like a lightness in my chest. I'm not in my bunk at Provo. I'm in some other bed. It's not mine, but it's not Provo's. You know, I go downstairs and there's Dad reading the paper. I gotta take a piss and I ask him, I'm like, hey Dad, can I go to the bathroom? And he looks at me like, what are you asking me for? Bathroom's down the hallway, you know, on the left, go knock yourself out. And he goes back to read his paper. And like, maybe he thought like, oh, Jeff's never lived with me. He doesn't know the house. But like, I didn't ask him like, where is the bathroom? I asked like, could I use it? And I mean, for him, it's like a non-question. Like, can you go to the bathroom? I hope so. I hope you can. You tell me. But what he didn't realize and what I was realizing was the extent to which like Provo had like really institutionalized.
I'm not drinking. Here's the dessert. You're the one who's drinking.
And so, yeah, like that first day, you know, I mean, I was constantly running up against like these non-existent barriers. Like, I'm Chum the Pony, like coming to my senses. You know, at Provo, the doors really are locked, and you just accept that and, you know, you further that notion to, you know, all areas of your existence. All doors, physical and psychological, you know, they're always locked. But here, on the outside, the doors, they're only locked inside my mind. And in reality, they're quite open. So yeah, I mean, over the next couple of days, you know, I'm spending like quality time with Dad. You know, he takes me to dinner at a restaurant where he's like the part owner. Afterwards, the chef comes out of the kitchen like to shake my hand. And you know, like an adult like kissing my ass, like that's new. My dad and I, you know, we play another game of tennis, but I'm so distracted. Like he just fucking wipes the court with me. So a week passes and it's 4th of July, my last day. My dad throws a big party. All his doctor buds are over, you know, barbecuing, you know, fucking pounding wine. You know, one of the cardiologists, like, he was funny. Guy's super lit. And he's trying to be all sort of like, you know, intellectual, cultural, like, you know, always searching for like a cool adjective to describe like, you know, Sonoma's hottest new Chardonnay. Oh, you know, very grassy. And my dad, like, he knew he was full of shit, but, you know, whatever. The guy refers him patient, so it's all cool. Everyone's getting lit, like, having fun. I mean, they're fucking raging. You know, at one point, my dad lights a firecracker under some nurse's ass, and she screams, and like, she's, like, swatting at my dad. Everyone's cracking up. And so me, I'm, like, tending the barbecue, and I'm looking at my dad, and I'm thinking, like, wait, he's just like me. This is a rager, like, with me and my friends in Saratoga. The only real difference is it's wine instead of beer, and maybe some weed, well. But essentially, it's the same, you know? Getting drunk and laughing with your friends. Like, how fucking rad is that? But then I'm like, hold on. Dad can do it, but I cannot. Like, what for him is a good time, for me, is a crime. And this hypocrisy, you know, it just rots inside of me. And after a while, it's just all fucking too much. So around 8:30, we all go up on this hill and, you know, watch the fireworks show. After which, you know, it's time for the sayonaras. All of my dad's friends, like, they all take off drunk driving into the night. And me, like, I've got, like, a net on the end of a pole, like, trying to fish that bottle of, like, Sonoma's hottest Chardonnay out of the swimming pool. Yeah, hell of a party. Inside the house, you know, I see my dad. He's on the couch watching Cheers. The ending credits are rolling. And, you know, he gets up and stretches. He's like, Jouster, I'm going to hit the hay. And I'm like, all right. I'm going to stay up a little longer and maybe watch some MTV, if that's cool. And he's like, yeah, of course. You know, he just wobbles off to bed. And so, like, I take his place on the couch, click over to MTV, and I'm surprised to see, like, Billy Idol, Eyes Without a Face. And, like, last time I heard, like, Billy Idol, he was this, like, scrappy punk from Generation X. But how far he's come. Now he's on a soundstage, you know, surrounded by pyrotechnic, punching at the camera. And so, yeah, you know, I'm watching Billy, you know, it's a cool new song for me. Rather melancholic, and it's got that wistful, longing melody. And it hits me. I've been gone for a while. And suddenly, you know, in my mind, I'm replaying the grimace picking me up off this couch, getting stuffed into the Cessna, and like, you know, the grimace's flashlight. But then I start thinking about moving up through the units, getting my drums, you know, and playing the show. Fucking, that's wild, you know? And it's like loving the slope has its rewards, you know? I built up quite a life back at Provo. And then all of a sudden, I'm like Jowie, dude, like, it's fucking Provo, man. And then my heart just starts fucking pounding. Because I'm thinking about everything I've built up back at Provo, you know, like the promise of hotel, you know, pizza nights, and like my drums and my privileges. And I'm apprehensive and I'm really scared because what I'm about to do is going to throw all of that away. But at the same time, I'm like exhilarated because it's Independence Day and I like believe 1000% that what I'm about to do will ensure that I'll never ever be back at Provo ever again. Or will it? I'm covered in doubt. But then I get my mind straight and I put my hand on the front door. And what do you know? It's open. I'm sprinting down the driveway and the stones that are crunching underneath my feet just, you know, feel like it's sounding an alarm. Like, you know, he's gone! Senior staff down 9 to Dad's house. I reach the end of the driveway and I'm waiting there for about 30 seconds. I see some headlights come down the road. I like instinctively like ditch behind like these redwood trees and, you know, watch the car pass. And like minutes drip by and I'm starting to panic. And then down the road, I see another pair of headlights approaching. But instead of rolling past, this car slows down. And then it stops, and I like press myself against the redwood tree. Is this the grimace? But it can't be the grimace. And then the car like revs its engine, almost like beckoning me. And then I recognize it. It's the fucking Beater Buick. I pop out of the trees, I rip open the door, and there's fucking Matt. He's sitting there revving the engine, like smoking a clove, you know, with his like dreadlock surfer hair and that kind of slack smile. It's so fucking Matt. And he just looks at me and he gives it to me. He's just all, ay-ya-ya! It's not like I rip the clove out of his mouth and take a big old fucking puff. Matt hits the gas, we peel out, and we're fucking gone. And like an instant, I'm fucking back. Like my little 17-year-old heart just wants to burst out of my chest with joy. Matt's got like a million questions. So they really kidnapped you? I'm like, yeah, they really threw you in a room with a bunch of older guys and you didn't see the sun for 3 weeks. I'm like, yeah, you know, and you have to stand and stare at the wall. Yeah. And like the more I can tell him, like the less he believes it. As we cross the Golden Gate, like San Francisco's skyline is just lit up with fireworks. It's Independence Day. It's my Independence Day from fucking Provo, you know? You know, and I start goofing on the grimace, like, he's Cornwallis, you know, fucking red coat, and I'm Washington, you know, in a blue coat, like, maybe in a rowboat, you know, crossing the Delaware. And then, like, remember Matt, like, points out, he's like, oh, you're not really supposed to stand up in, like, rowboats. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, but that would make a pretty lame painting, you know, like, Washington standing up and the other guy's doing the rowing. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And whatever. Then we're like, fuck it, you know? So, like, you know, we're making our way down 280, you know, past Stanford, Palo Alto. Matt takes, like, the Saratoga Sunnyvale exit, and I'm like, I'm back home. We pass the 7-Eleven, and the sight of a gang of freshmen, you know, hanging around, hoping to tap shoulder for beers, the patience, the dedication, like, I'm moved to tears, you know? I'm back! We happen upon a caravan, VW Bugs and Squarebacks, 1960s Valiant with surf racks, and like Matt follows it into the neighborhood that we called the Maze, which is all these like track homes built in, I don't know, made like the 50s or something. And so we're following this caravan and we stop and we get out and climb up on a fence. And in the backyard of this house, there's a gang like crowding around a keg, and I can start picking out like Friend, No Aid, you know, fucking Weiner, fucking Broadman, Yandel Brehm, you know, the Red Ape. And I just want to jump the fence and pick up right where I left off. But Matt, he's like, that would be the stupidest thing to do. So we linger longer until it's time to move on. And I don't really have a plan. My plan ran out behind the redwood tree waiting for Matt. But luckily, he's got an idea. We take off and, you know, out of the maze, and we start winding up the foothills of the Santa Cruz Mountains. Matt pulls over and he gets out of the car and he just points up this steep mountain and he's like, up there's the grow patch. And I'm like, our grow patch? He's like, yeah, just go straight up and you can't miss it. Put a sleeping bag up there. There's some water, some food. Go spend the night up there and I'll come back in and check on it. And, you know, I'm like, okay. And I don't think twice about it. Big hugs to Matt. I grab like a rucksack and start making my way up the mountain. The trail's like super overgrown, but the moon's out, and so at least it's bright. About 10 minutes up, the trail leads to this like clearing. Like, he really did it. And I'm like surrounded by like these mature, beautiful, fragrant, 6-month-old sativa plants. And they're all like in flower. I find a little sleeping bag, a jug of water. There's a pack of Dajarams. Those are like the clove cigarettes from Indonesia. Matt fucking loved those things. A Bic lighter. I find like a little plastic bag that's filled with all this 7-Eleven food. You know, some red vines, corn nuts. And by this time I'm starving, so I start like scarfing down on this Abba Zabba's. It's like peanut butter taffy. Which is a mistake because they take like forever to chew. And I've only got like so much water, but I start rolling out the sleeping bag, and it kind of hits me. Whoa, like, you're not going to sleep in a bed tonight. You no longer have a bed. Back at Provo, I had a bunk bed, and I had a closet. You know, sure, it's dark to light, fucking keep them tight. But you don't have any of that anymore. Now, you're like a camper. You're a troll up at a grow patch. You know, like, living close to the bone. And so, yeah, I feel like a little pang of anxiety until what do I see there stashed in the bushes? Like, it's the fucking Cyclops! You know, that purple communal bong from back in the days of the ramp. And I look around at all these plants and like, fuck, man, you don't have to tell me what to do. So I just fucking rip off a crown, stuff it in the bowl, light up, and I just get fucking high as shit. So, you know, I mean, I just lay on my back and, you know, and I stare up at the stars.
Past the world's flashing stars, all in this cosmic, always night. Take time to reflect on our sad lives lost forever.
Nobody knows I've escaped from Provo. Not my dad, not the Grimace. Matt knows. But here I am, you know? Cuddled up with the Cyclops in an undisclosed location in the Santa Cruz Mountains. What tomorrow holds for me, like, I have no idea. But right here and right now, like, I and I be all right.
Thank you. It's me. It's like the fucking puddle of night up here. I swear there's something out there, man. Like I saw it like 2 seconds ago, like these two eyes shining back at me, like. And then I heard it too, it's fucking gnarly, like. Like, what the fuck is that shit? I fucking smashed a beer bottle against a rock and I'm like, come on, motherfucker, let's go. And then it fucking left. I don't know what the fuck. Maybe it was like a fucking bear. Or a bobcat or some other fucking thing, like a grizzly. Like, I don't know, man. Do the Santa Cruz Mountains even have grizzlies? I don't know. Fuck, maybe I'm just stoned. Fucking stupid Cyclops. Where is that thing?
So the next morning I wake up, or rather I'm woken up by the sun. So this place is like the ideal grow patch. The sun just fucking bakes down on it all day long. The sativa plants, like, they're loving it, but me, you know, not so much. I'm just like super hot and kind of uncomfortable. But it's a beautiful day and I have fuck all to do. So I grab the Cyclops and, you know, wake and bake. And then just start, like, tending the plants, you know? What else is there to do? Every now and then, I trip out, like, wow, my dad, he must be fucking pissed. And so that means my dad must know. And if he knows, the Grimace knows. He's drawn his circle. How big is it? I have no idea. But you know the Cessna is on its way out. And it's not just the Grimace and a few goons. Like, he'll be coordinating with fucking local police. And then I'm like, fuck, what time is it? Like, I don't have a watch. You know, I look up and the sun's, like, almost directly overhead. So I figured, you know, it's got to be late morning, like, say 11. And so I'm just sitting there, you know, trimming one of the plants. And I hear some, like, rustling out in the woods. But, like, this time I'm like, no. Settle down, Joey. That's the weed. Like, maybe cool it with the Cyclops. But, like, the rustling doesn't stop. It's still there. There's something coming up the trail. Like, what the fuck is that? Is this a bobcat? Is this a bear? Is this the fucking Grimace? And so the rustling, it's getting closer and closer. And, like, I'm in the midst of this full-blown panic attack until I hear it. Ayayah! It's fucking Matt, you know? And he's brought me, like, a big gulp of Hawaiian Punch and a Jumbo Jack, which is just fucking beautiful. You know, we hang out and take hits off the Cyclops. He turns me on to the King of Dub, which is this super stony reggae cassette that he scored in Santa Cruz. And so, you know, we finish watering the plants and Matt, he's got to take off, but, you know, he promises to come back tomorrow with some Taco Bell. And so, you know, I pass a few days like this, you know, just tending the plants, partaking in the Cyclops, and, like, that's about it. Day three, what starts off as, like, a little itch on my thumb, it turns into a rash that spreads over my wrists and up my forearms. And, you know, in the blazing hot sun, it just aggravates things. And this little rash, it begins to ooze oil that spreads onto my torso and my legs and, like, all over my fucking, you know, dick and balls. That one sickly sativa plant I've been nursing, you know, the one with the oily leaves, well, turns out she ain't sativa, she's poison oak. So, like, medically, I'm not doing well, but, like, psychologically, I'm up, I'm energized. I mean, hey, I ain't like that kid who escaped and was, like, brought right back. I'm still out, like, I might even have, like, the world record, you know? So, for today's visit, Matt has brought me some corn nuts and a small can of Dintymore soup from 7-Eleven. And some good news. He tells me he ran into one of my best friends, Adam. His brother Jason played bass for the Blue Beats, so Adam and I, we were super tight. So Matt trusted him and told him I had escaped and was somewhere, like, up in the mountains. But that I contracted a pretty bad case of poison oak, and that in general, you know, the situation was looking, you know, unsustainable. And so Adam tells his peas, his parents like Hank and Barb, super cool people. I mean, total godsends. And Hank, he's so rad. He's like this Mexican who has this sort of cool clipped way of speaking, kind of like classic Rat Pack way of speaking. And he tells Adam, he's like, I can't have Jefferson, like he called me Jefferson. I can't have Jefferson living in the bushes like a dog, you know? Tell him he can come stay with us. I remember hearing this and like tearing up. For the first time in a long time, I felt like I was okay. I don't know how to explain it. It was like someone, an adult, recognized me, like not as a problem, but as a person. I mean, sure, a person with big problems, but not the embodiment of the problem. Provo, the entire experience had conditioned me to view myself like as a juvenile delinquent, you know, a bad seed, a fucking wretch. And so occupying that new bad jow psyche, I just felt unwanted. Hank offering to take me in, he erased all that. He restored me. He restored my sense of self-worth. Hank's a fucking king. You know, I'm like to Matt, I'm like, when can we go? Matt's like, grab your stuff, you know? You know, so I just bid farewell to the Cyclops. That was the last I ever saw that dude. You know, we hiked down the trail to the road, and Matt's girlfriend, Erin, she's there. And she's like, okay, wait, before we go, we got to do something. And like 5 minutes later, I'm standing in a creek, and Erin's reading the box of like, Clairol or Maybelline, and she's all like, I left it on for 10 minutes like it says, and me, like my hair, it's now like rubber duck yellow. Like if the idea is to make me, you know, somewhat inconspicuous, now I'm like the most conspicuous I could possibly be. No problem picking me out in the crowd, that's for sure. But hey, yeah, you know, it's a new look. So we get to the Carbajals that afternoon, which is also sort of in the foothills, and they have this little dirt road that kind of winds up to their house, which sits on a little pad. Benjamin, that's their big black Great Dane, you know, he's jogging alongside the Buick, woofing, like he does with any car that approaches the house. But I get out and like Benjamin nuzzles into my legs, like he remembers me, and that's cool, that's nice. Adam comes out and his big hugs and, you know, tons of questions. And then Barbara comes out and she's awesome. She's got like this kind of New York accent. She's like, God, Jeff, who did your hair? And Aaron's kind of, you know, like 5 minutes, just like the box said. And I'm like, wait a second. It was 10 back in the creek. But yeah, whatever. Inside the house, Barbara puts some lotion on my poison oak. And Hank, he lays out a plate of his like homemade tamales. And these are like famous. I mean, like how many times have Adam, Jason, and I, you know, come home with the munchies, you know, only to find like Hank left us a plate. It's like, whoa, you know. But yeah, Hank sits me down and he's just all like,
Jefferson, what the hell are you doing living up in the mountains? Hotter than a two-peckered goat up there, okay? Now get yourself a tamale. Made them this morning. Put some sour cream on it, okay?
And I mean, like, I'm just in heaven. I'm at the Carbajals hanging with Matt and Adam, putting sour cream on Hank's tamales. This could be any day of my old life. And thinking back, you know, I'll concede that that was really selfish of me. I didn't stop to think, like not for 1 second, about how me coming to their house could put Hank in trouble. Contributing to the delinquency of a minor. $2,500 in fines and... you get a shitty dick judge, and that's like a year in jail. But I was a 17-year-old kid at the time, you know? My mindset was all about me returning back to my old life and returning to my friends. So I start living with the Carbajals. I got a change of address. I can no longer be found at 4501 North University Ave, Provo, Utah, 84604. My new address, you know, that, you know, remains unpublished for the time being. Am I still number 196? For the moment, doesn't really feel like it. But then again, you know, although I'm free, I'm not carefree. I develop some, like, peculiar habits. I'll, like, zip past windows and press close to the walls, like a mouse not wanting to be seen. And I become somewhat like Adam's E.T. I'm this secret tenant that he's got to keep hidden away in his closet. Hidden away from the Grimace and his goon squad, but, you know, also hidden away from, like, the curious and loose-lipped of the Saratoga tribe. And slowly, you know, we were sort of opening up, like, the circle of trust. Carolyn, the girl I've had a crush on, she comes over. And her hug, you know, it's been, like, 6 months in the waiting. My little heart wants to burst out of my chest. And so between Adam, Matt, Aaron, and Carolyn, you know, we formed this sort of committee to debate, you know, who are we going to let in next, you know? The Red Ape wants to cruise by. You know, I think he knows, but I'm not sure. Fucking Omega Man said, hey, you know, if you see Jowie, you know, tell him to cruise by. I'll get him stoned. It's like, fucking Omega Man, no way. He's way too loose. Like, he'll fucking tell everybody. And then I'm like, well, fucking everybody already knows, you know? And of course, you know, Adam's like, do they? Like, I haven't said anything, you know? And Matt's like, don't look at me, you know? No, we're like, you know, the typical committee. We just chit-chat a lot and just do nothing. And so a week goes by, and the poison oak clears up. And soon, you know, I'm no longer feeling like a bad seed. You know, like a weed that wants extracting. I'm feeling cared for, like nourished. Literally, you know, thanks to Hank's tamales. But it doesn't take long before the Carbajal house, despite furnishing this righteous sanctuary, becomes another building from which I cannot leave. Another intake. And so, you know, to pass the time, I start drifting back towards my, you know, like my hedonistic excesses. You know, like sneaking a clove, I like a Hank and Barber out. No big deal. But when Adam tells me his girlfriend is throwing a rager, and fucking Family Crisis is playing. And I'm like, Family Crisis? That's like Saratoga's hottest new punk band. Dude, of course I want to go. And so I start pushing. And Adam, you know, he's against it. He's become rather protective of his little ET. And, you know, he insists like we call committee, but we can't because Aaron's in Santa Cruz and Carolyn's traveling around in Europe with her parents and Matt is up at the Grow Patch. Well, not quite. Turns out that while I've been trying to convince Adam it's time for E.T. to go home, or at least go out, Matt has pulled over at the trailhead leading up to the Grow Patch, where he sees, parked on this normally, you know, deserted mountain road, a fucking black rental car. Matt goes up to the windows, he's looking through, and he sees lying on the passenger seat these papers. Papers that say police report. And Matt, he's so fucking rad, he lives for this shit. He runs back to the Beater Buick and he grabs the dirty pruning shears, most likely off of the back seat, despite his dad's harping. And he fucking cuts the valve stems off all four tires and just fucking peels out. And so Matt, like a real Paul Revere, is racing over to sound the alarm that the Grimace is in Saratoga. Meanwhile, poor Adam, who's had enough of my shit, pushing and pushing, he follows me out the door, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to the party.
Next time on Escape from Provo Canyon.
And out of the blue, all of a sudden, she's like, hey, I want to take a shower. Do you want to take a shower?